session number 24830, Reel 10.
Mr. Hibberson, Reel 10. I was talking about you returning to work as a plumber at Mildenhall, the base there.
Yeah.
Did you have trouble? Sort of. Had you forgotten any of your basic skills? Did the loss of the eye?
You lose a lot of the touch, don't you? And I was a bit fortunate in some ways where the type of work I was doing and the number of, and I had somebody work. We worked in pairs. And that gave me a bit of an opportunity to get back into it. But that did, I did struggle, actually. I struggled with my job for, oh, maybe 2 years, 18 months
or so.
Technically
struggled.
Technically struggled, yeah. And with my skills too. You know, lead working, and in them days you used to wipe joints and things like that. And that maybe took me 18 months. To 2 years to get right back into it. And I wasn't at Mildenhall all that while. I mean, I was at Mildenhall for about, I don't know, I can't remember really, 6-8 months, maybe something like that. And I'm working, they were rebuilding, John Lang's were rebuilding the whole air base for the mountains. And I worked for a firm called Shoesmith. They were called a London plumbing contractors who were contracting, doing the plumbing work for Shoesmith. I seemed to be struggling, but saying that, when that job finished, the foreman plumber, they wanted me to go up to a big job up north with him, what he'd taken on in a housing estate or something they were going to do. He asked me if I'd go up there with him, and I said no, if I'm going to travel about, I might have stayed in the army. So I came back, excuse me, I came back to Norwich, working in Norwich, I went back to the, and I got a job with somebody I knew locally for a while, for a few weeks, and then I went and worked for a couple of bigger firms. I worked for a firm, but then I was getting way back into it. I worked for a firm called Greengrass, and we used to do a lot of schools. I did it, but I was always working away. I was working at Downham Market, and I used to travel, that's about 45 miles from me. I used to travel backwards and forwards there most days. But I must have been getting back out of there because the boss there sort of put me more or less running the job, you know, the plumbing side of it, and that's just quite a big school. And I worked for them for a few years, and a couple of years or so, maybe. And then one morning I missed a truck. I just started another school. That one was being finished at Downham Market, and I just went. They'd started another school, at Methwold, and I went over there to sort out the iron drain work in the ground, and I used to run a truck out there, yeah, and I missed it one morning, and I'm fed up with this early mornings, getting a truck at 7:15, half past 6 in the morning, and I thought I'd go from one extreme to the other, and I went to the Norwich Council, saw the foreman plumber, and asked him if he wanted any plumbers, and he said, well, no, not the minute, and I'll take your name. Ben said, I wasn't working that day. I thought, I may as well do that. I'd missed a truck. I thought, I may as well do that. And I went and saw him. So I'll take your name. Never paid any attention to it. But a couple of days later, I came from work, and he'd been round my house and said, I could start the following week. So I worked for the City Council until I was about 30 then. I worked there, I suppose, 6-7 years. The City Council, and then I got, well, it was okay, I sort of got on reasonably well there, and but in those days, that was the old days when you used to have a foreman and used to run everything, and I mean, the foreman was quite a responsible job, but friend of mine was the original foreman retired, and a friend of mine, a chap who I'd pulled up with through working there, we'd got quite friendly through working there, and we worked together a lot on the council, doing bigger jobs and the normal repairs. And he was made up the foreman, and I was sort of like his understudy. And I thought, well, he ain't much older than me, I can't wait for him to retire for promotion. And the plumbing trade generally picked up because central heating, people started to put central heating in houses when it first started. And I used to do a bit of work on night times and weekends, and I put a couple of these heating systems in for friends. And I thought, well, this has got to be the thing of the future for the plumbing. And the opportunity came along where we get about, 3 months' work. Definitely a couple of big jobs, and somebody else I knew who was a builder was then starting the development of about 40 bungalows, which he was going to build about 5 or 6 a year, just out of the city. And I thought, well, here's an opportunity, so I packed my job in with the council and started working myself.
And you stayed on that till you
And yourself? I stayed on that till I finished work, yeah.
What about your disability? You got a disability pension. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, I applied for and got a disability pension, 30%, which is a going rate for one eye. And, on that I still get it, and I've had it all the time. Since I came out of the army, in fact, when I went for my medical for my discharge, and the medical officer there said, well, I suppose you're putting in for a pension, are you? So I said, because you see a lot of tales then that they try to fill you out of it and all that sort of thing in them days. And he said, you should put in for a pension. He said, no, but he said, I'll give you a bit of advice. Say, don't tie any lies. If you can say anything but that eye, tell them what little you can see. So I know you can see a little out of it. Tell them. Don't exaggerate. Don't tell them any lies. And I didn't. And I never had no problem. And they told me as they go on right for an eye anyway, it's 30% of a full pension.
Was that much money then?
16 sixpence a week.
Doesn't sound much now, but was it a decent amount then?
Well, that's now about 35 quid a week, the same amount, same percentage of pension. But I don't know what's happened to the pensions. I was looking at that. There's increase this year. We got an increase of 1.75%. Why, how they arrive at that, I don't know. Whether they made a mistake and that's all that should be, I don't know.
Were you happy with that level? I mean, did you think it was fair or fairish?
Well, I didn't know whether I could get any more, because we're all looking for more in life, aren't we? But I did have an opportunity to meet somebody through work, really. But I met with somebody who was a solicitor or something. He was on a tribunal which travelled about the country listening to these appeals. And I met him at a social level. And I said to him, do you think that's worth my while appealing? And he said, no. He said, Benz, you got no disfigurement facially, which I didn't have. He said, I found at first, and I still can't do it. I can't catch. I played football before I went in the army, and a little bit in the army. When I came out, somebody came round. I got a place this weekend, you know. Yeah. Never thought nothing about it. Went up there, played. Kept missing the ball. I just can't. I never played anymore. That's the last time I played. I just can't judge the distance on a travelling ball. And I found for the first 6 months, maybe a year or so, it took me. I found it difficult to judge distances. Because with one eye, you get a lot of flat vision, don't you? You get your third dimension where the two eyes focusing on or something. If I look through one of these 3D things, what you hold in front of these coloured glasses things, I mean, that don't work for me. They're still the same, just different colour. You know, you do lose that third dimension, and I couldn't play anything with anything like with a moving ball, tennis or, you know, golf weren't too bad, because you're always hitting a stationary ball. You shouldn't hit it when it's moving. But you know, so but I mean anything, you know, I found that a handicap. I also found at work at times where I'd be looking around, especially in plumbing work, you're looking up the back of a bath at something or the other, and you only got one eye. I used to have to always carry a mirror with me, and I used to use a mirror and a torch to look at things what some people would be able to see with their right eye, what I couldn't see. But you know, but generally speaking, I will be honest with you. I mean, generally speaking, I've now been, 50 odd years, one eye, 50 years, and I don't find it I haven't found it a really, really, really severe handicap. Not a severe handicap at all, I ain't found it a big handicap. I did once have an operation. That did come in later years, because I'm diabetic, and I photograph your eyes a lot to look for a glaucoma and whatever starting. And I used to actually photograph your eyes. And I used to go to an eye infirmary to have that done. They do it at a diabetic clinic now, but in them days I used to, because I had this diabetes about 20 years. And they this particular time, one of the main sort of eye specialist did it for me, and he said, "Oh yeah," he said, "Oh, you see on your record you got this thing with this eye." He says, "Have a look in that," and he said to me, "Don't the rest of your eye is healthy in it?" I say, "Yeah." He said, "The problem is that lens, which is really now non-existent." He said, "It's just a little bit of rubbish," but he said, "I can't see through it." He said, "At all," but he said, "That's just a bit of rubbish. The lens is." But he said, really, he said, I think if I do a cataract operation, which is putting the plastic lens in, you'll be able to see over that eye again. How do you feel about that? This is about 15 years ago, you see, because I was excited. Well, I've gone all these years and I'm going to be able to see over that eye again. So you may have it. Find it difficult to get out to work at first. I may not want to know at first. The brain, it'll take a little while for the brain, etc., etc. Anyway, I had to wait some time, maybe nearly a year. Eventually, I came up to have this cataract operation, which I had. They put a new lens in. But unfortunately, what he couldn't see was there was damage to the retina at the back of the lens, which had been caused earlier surgery and removing bits of shrapnel. So the vision is now, I can always say that I didn't make it any worse. What vision I had in it was about 5%. I suppose I perhaps got about, I couldn't watch television or read or anything like that. I couldn't drive or anything like that. But if I lost a sight as the other eye now, I might be able to walk about if I was careful. You know, with a white stick, you know, because I, you know, traffic and that sort of thing. But way before, that would have been absolutely.
It gave
nothing.
You a bit of insurance, I suppose, yeah, in case you lost your real eye.
Yeah, I don't, you know, it's one of them things. But.
Were there any other effects of your war service, mentally, physically, good or bad?
Oh, yeah. No, I think in some points, at some time, we've all got involved in things in a life through all sorts of different things, and you think to yourself, oh, I don't fancy doing this, or I've got to meet so and so. But I've often thought to myself, I've done bloody worse than this. What are you worried about? You know? And that sort of gives you a little bit of a thing that you think to yourself, God, blimey, you know, I remember once being got involved in a, it weren't me who was a criminal, but in a court case thing, and them sort of things, if you aren't used to them, can be quite frightening to go and stand in front of a court and say your bit, and everybody's trying to criticise, or half the people try to criticise you, the other people then, because, but, and I remember thinking, you think to yourself, well, what are you worrying about, I've done worse than this. At least they ain't going to kill me. They can't do that. I got worse than this. You know, that sort of has done good. I think when I first came out, it did take me a couple of years to settle down.
What were your problems in the acclimatising?
I wasn't working. I don't know. Settling down, I think. I just felt if I wanted to travel a bit. I didn't really feel if I wanted to settle in one place, to be honest with you. At times I wanted to just get up and emigrate or go to Australia or something like that. And a couple of times I'm starting to make a move towards, because in them days they were looking for tradesmen in Australia. And I weren't very competent at work. I didn't feel very competent in myself for the first year or so, really, I think. You know, it took me a year to get my confidence. My self-confidence back, work-wise, working in a job.
Now, what about this meeting with Bob Guest? Can you tell us the whole story of when he came back?
Yeah, as I said, I was out of the army. I came home from, picked up the Daily Mirror one morning, and there was a picture of Bob Guest on it. Then, with a couple of others, then being released to MJ in exchange of sick and wounded prisoners. There's a picture of his girlfriend Thelma in the hat factory in Luton with her friends around him and all smiles and all happy. And I thought, oh, great. I think this is about, I came out in March, this would be the April or May time, I think. And I thought, great, Bob's coming on, you know, before the war finishes. And, oh, yeah. So, as I said, I was working then at Melbourne Holidays to get home till about 7:15 at night. Come walking in one night, it was my mother's house, I was living then, I was single. Walked in, and there's Bob and Thelma sitting in there in our living room, having a cup of tea, and great, they'd come home and the Yarmouth Hotel Association, I believe, had given them a holiday at Great Yarmouth, and about 20 Mark Road, and he thought he'd come see me.
What was he like when you saw him? I mean, you know, how did you feel?
I felt great. Well, it was great to see him, wasn't it, you know, and because asked him what happened and how they treated him and his leg, and he still had the bits of bone in a bag when they took out of his leg and what have you, the Chinese, and because I still didn't know he hadn't been hit in the stomach, and then I learned that he'd been, he had a bit of a scar there in them days where he'd been hitting his,
on his left cheek.
Yeah.
Did he realise you couldn't have, I mean, there's always a slight thing, you might have thought you'd left him, but I mean,
no, I don't think he did. No, but that old friend he was, and the effort and made. And we then went, and with a pal of mine, we went down to Yarmouth another night later in the week and spent another evening with them, and then invited us to, said, would you come to Luton? If you can come to Luton, and that was not that weekend, the weekend after. And they were having an official do at his local club. Sort of a welcome home thing. Sort of come as a guest of honour.
What was that night like?
Oh my God, what a night. I can't remember too the end part of it, but I know that every time I turned around, somebody put a pint pot in my hand, and what needed emptying. And that was a great evening. We had a lot of fun and got a bit drunk. And there was 5 or 6 of us who were on the patrol were actually there. Well, he'd managed to get in touch with. That was terrific. And I know the guy who was playing the piano and done a bit of singing in this club, he used to do the clubs around that area in the winter, and in the summer He played a piano and sang in a place called a Holcombe at Great Yarmouth, which was a big bar on the front. And it used to get absolutely heaving, and he used to play the piano in there and sing in there. Because I got to know him, I got talking to him that night, because he picked up the Norfolk accent, and he's saying that he was off to Yarmouth in a few weeks' time in the Holcombe. And anyway, we had a good night in this club this night, and it all got a bit motory in the end. He was playing Rue Britannia, which was a Royal Norfolk march past, and we were getting everyone there to stand at attention, all that sort of rubbish, you know. And we had a great night anyway. And I think we spent the night at Barnes and went home the next morning or whatever. I can't remember whether my mate drove home that night. But he didn't drink very much. He certainly wouldn't have drank, you know. So, yeah, that was good. And
you've stayed in touch with him ever since, on and off?
Well, on and off for a number of years. I mean, they then asked me to be best man at their wedding. And that was a weekend of my TA camp. And well, it was during a TA fortnight's camp. And they wouldn't give me the... I got in touch with the territorials at the Britannia Barracks, but they wouldn't give me permission to go weekend there. So I had to go to the camp.
Now, tell me about you. This is your reserve status now.
That's
tell
right.
us why, because most regular, most
National Service
have to go into the TA.
That's right.
Tell us what happened to you, because you had a ruse.
Well, I was in the Army Emergency Reserve. Because I was at Headquarters Eastern Command, where everything was sorted out. I knew the chap who used to put down what TA things you were going in and all that sort of thing when you came out. And he said to me, if you say you're a traveller and you travel about the country all the time, you won't have to go into TA because you can't do the nighttime drills and the weekend camps. Well, they put you in the Army. I can put you in the Army Emergency Reserves, where you do 15 days camp a year instead of 14. And that was what I'd done. So I did my... I never done no really territorial thing. That was just the Army Emergency Reserve, and I used to have to go for 15 days a year.
And that was for 3 years, was it?
For 3 years.
So 54, 55, 56.
Yeah.
And what would you do at the annual camps? Just, I mean, you couldn't do much at all.
Well, every time I got there, I had to explain to them I was excused all duties. So they were going to medically downgrade me, but every time I came round to it, that was time to go home from camp again, and I'd never seen them one for a year. So it never did happen, really. But I used to work in the stores and things like that. I used to work in the stores and so on.
Now, another thing is you refused to join the Royal Norfolk Regiment Association because as far as you were concerned, you were already in it.
That's right, I didn't refuse. As far as I was concerned, I'd paid my life membership. And I never got the membership. I definitely parted with £1. I was signed to say I'd had £2 and they gave me £1. And the other £1 was for the life membership.
So
but I weren't the only one, they must have been.
They've never resolved that, so you're not
no.
a member?
No.
Except, well, you are, but you're not.
I'm not, I ain't an official member, that is why I won't join.
Do you, you don't attend any of their functions?
Then? No, I joined the Korean Veterans Association.
Now, what does that do for you?
Well, that's okay. I mean, I don't go as much as I did simply because... although we don't do very much these days, there's another organisation I'm involved with, and I was involved with StartNet, which is a widows and widows thing. And we used to meet the first Tuesday evening of every month with the Korean Veterans Association.
What was good about it? I understand you can't send it now, but what did it bring for you? What was good about it?
Well, it was all right, just a matter of meeting a few old friends and having a chat and that sort of thing, as far as I was concerned. I don't really get into going on parades and things like that. I didn't get into that. I never did, and I haven't for them.
Thank you very much.